Ladies and gentlemen, from around the universe, it's time for the James Whale Radio Show.
James Whale, the voice of reason on the James Whale Radio Show.
Right, here we go. A very good day to you. Got a fascinating program today. Also, I'll be talking to a man called Will Geddes, an old friend of mine, who runs a security firm, but not really the sort of bloke who supplies bouncers to nightclub doors. You'll find out more about what Will does a little later on in the program. Let's say hello to Rob.
Hello.
Okay, Rob, thank you very much indeed. Before we go anywhere, thank you. I've had a lot of messages for my birthday, something that I tried to avoid. I had forgotten that social media makes it almost impossible to hide your birthday. And so thank you for your card.
Yeah.
And we had hundreds of messages on Facebook. And in fact, my Facebook's inbox is full. So thank you for that. And on Twitter and just messages sent into the radio show. So thank you very much indeed. Now, just before we start, Rob, I want to say back on Wednesday of last week, very sad news came through that Stephen Sutton was the young lad who had bowel cancer, who you may remember raised over £3 million. I don't know whether any of you, I'm sure you all remember it. And he's raised a lot of money for the Teenage Cancer Trust. And I don't know about you, but as somebody who has had cancer, I just thought the way that he handled himself in what was a very short life was absolutely amazing. And I think maybe a move to talk about dying and how we approach it. I don't know whether that's the sort of subject that, Rob, you want to talk about, but I'll tell you why I thought we would talk about him. Because there was an article I read in the paper the other day as well, and it was about wanting to bring into the curriculum of schools lessons about death. Now, Rob, you've got a young daughter, haven't you?
Yes.
You talk to her about death?
Vaguely. Not directly. I get asked every now and again.
You see, this is, we don't do death in this country very well. It's something we pretend isn't going to happen. And I think Steve Sutton's story is he really faced life and what life he had in, I think, the best way. When I was diagnosed with cancer, I was told that I might live 6 months, I might live 20-odd years, who knows? And in the first couple of years after my diagnosis, I did do and make sure that I did the things I thought I might not have time to do. And I got in my mind, and I think this happens to everybody who's suddenly told that their mortality is in question, that they might have not perhaps as long to live as they thought. Now, I don't want to make this depressing, so don't turn off. I don't want to make this one of those chats where people feel, oh, I don't want to listen to that. But this is the thing. We're all going to die. There isn't one person listening to this program at the moment who is going to live forever. Yet, we all feel that we might. And if you address the fact that at a certain time, and you will know when it is, and trust me, there is a feeling of calm and a feeling of, well, okay, this is the way it's going to be. There's nothing you can do about it, so I'm just going to have to make the most of it. And it's not a question of being brave or anything else. It's a question that you will realize that this is part of life. And I think in this country, where we get very maudlin about it and people don't really want to talk about it, and other countries do it differently. Other communities approach death in a completely different way. And I wonder if it's time that the good old stiff British upper lip is time that we molded a bit. And we talked about it, the way we want to go. I mean, I don't know whether you've thought about it, but I don't want any church service of people looking really, talking, in my view, quite a lot of rubbish about things. I want people to sort of talk about, well, I mean, if maybe nobody wants to talk about me at all when I've gone. I mean, maybe, you know, just burn me and do whatever. But I personally, if you're asking me what I'd like, it's the same way as if you're saying, what do you want for your birthday? I quite like a bit of a do. I'd like to be cremated. I don't want to be buried. I want to be cremated outside. I'd quite like to be cremated in a forest. Whether that's possible, I have no idea. But I have thought about it, and I have discussed it with my nearest and dearest, and it's something that I think a lot of us don't do. I mean, in the paper also, Richard and Judy have discussed what they're going to do and how they're going to help each other end their lives when they've decided to do it. So LeBlanc has said she thinks 75. She's 71 now. She thinks another 4 years, and that's it, which is she might be feeling great. Look at Bruce Forsyth. But I think we have to approach it, and we have to put in place things to make it happen. A vast majority of people in this country haven't even written a will. And, you can't check out the way you checked in. When you checked in, you had nothing and you didn't have to do anything. But when you've checked out, you've accumulated, it might be debts, it might not, but you have to put things in order. And I think we should talk about death. I think we should talk about death. I think we should think about the fact that, maybe we should look around for the best deal. Because quite often you go to a funeral director and that's it. You don't shop around. You go and take whatever they give you. So I think it's worth a conversation. Maybe people like to Facebook us on that. Rob, what are you going to do for your funeral?
Well, hopefully I'll be there.
Well, trust me, you will. But what would you like?
I think I would definitely like to be cremated.
Yeah.
I don't like the idea of worms crawling all over me and stuff in a coffin.
You wouldn't feel it. But, I mean, I think it's actually very... To me, if you want to be buried, I think, to be quite honest, that's selfish. There's not a lot of land left. I mean, just having it taken up with you having a bit stuck in there. You know, get yourself cremated. Get yourself scattered. But it's a personal thing. I mean, if you feel differently, that it's a free country, that's fine.
Any particular forest you want to be? I'm just making notes for later.
Are you? Oh, okay. I've got several places. I'm not going to tell you here now where I think I'd be quite happy to be. But it doesn't matter, because whatever you believe, whether you have a religion or not, whatever happens after this, and whether your continuation in life is just the fact that we are. Did you realise we are a large amount of electricity goes to making up the human being? Did you know that?
Yes, your whole body runs on electricity.
And you can't get rid of electricity. You can't just get rid of it. It's always there. Whatever happens to the receptacle that electricity is in, the electricity will continue.
I'm not quite sure about that.
No, seriously, it just carries on, doesn't it? It just goes somewhere else. When lightning has struck,
yeah,
that lightning just doesn't disappear. It just goes away somewhere else.
Mm.
What?
I don't want to say anything that might, upset you. Because if that's what you believe, then that's fine.
Okay, well, it's as good a belief as anything. So it may well be that the fact that you get cremated or you get buried, that you rot away, and that the nutrients in your body and everything in your body rots away and feeds some other form of life, whether it's a slug or a snail or a plant or a tree, it just generates into something else. How's that?
Yeah, I go with that. Yeah, that
you
that,
go with that.
That one I accept.
Well, let's get a few people emailing us or Facebooking us or tweeting us and giving us their thoughts.
Just going to make a note to change the batteries in my torch.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. All right, listen, welcome to the programme anyway. You're listening to James Wells Radio Show .co.uk that you can get almost anywhere, can't you?
Absolutely everywhere.
Yeah, you can get it everywhere.
Even dead people can get us.
Where?
Even dead people can get us.
Yeah, yeah, of course you can, yes. Whereas radio waves go through you wherever you are. The internet passes through you, does it not? Must do. This week, music on the programme, we're doing a bit of gypsy swing courtesy of talentgb.com. So we'll have a bit of light relief with a bit of gypsy swing a little later. I was at the Radio Awards earlier this week.
Did you win anything?
No. I haven't won anything since 1988.
I forgot to put the nomination in, sorry.
Well, I should think so. But I was there with Pat Sharp and David Jensen, the kid, Tony Blackburn, who was given the Gold Award. And Tony said, he said, I got this award 25 years ago already. They say, oh, well, we couldn't find anybody else. And I'm sitting there beside him thinking, what about me? But anyway, it's not to be. Maybe next year. You never know. Maybe next year.
Sorry, I was doodling, my pen flicked. Sorry.
Why?
Well, you know when you're using a pen and and it clicks in it and the sort of nib bit goes back in the pen. That's what that noise.
Am I so boring that you're fiddling around with your bloody pen?
I've drawn some really good pictures this week.
Have you? Well, yeah. Put them online. We'll have a look.
Oh no, some.
Did you watch my movie? It says on our running order. We have a running order for the show. It says you watched Cold and Dark.
I did.
And do you want to give us a little critique?
Well, I don't want to give it a critique because you're in it and your friend is in it, and you know, I'm already giving it a critique, aren't I? But just saying that. Yes, it's a movie.
All right. Let me put it this way: did you enjoy my performance as the villain?
I can honestly say 100%, apart from Luke Goss, you were the best thing in it.
Yeah, Luke and I were the best things in it, weren't we?
The stare that you give when you're getting in, you're being bundled into that car, and the mean look on your face is typical James Whale. And I was like, wow. You didn't say anything.
They thought it was quite funny because I'm known for talking, and so the producers thought it was quite funny if I don't say anything through the whole movie, but the character I play, they refer to the whole time.
Well, you're in it for about, I'd say, 25 seconds throughout the whole film.
Yeah, not in it very often. That was about 3 weeks' work, by the way.
Were you in the end bit, in the container?
No.
Did you actually die in the film?
They alluded that I was in it. I actually didn't have to be in there to be killed off.
Yeah, because it's sort of, well, it was like a bloody mess, to be honest. But
well, I've seen the movie about 5 times, and I don't understand it.
Oh, I understand it. It's just not very well put together.
Well, yeah. Luke said that as well. Which you know, it's have a look at it. It was quite a low budget movie. Although having said that, the prosthetics in it of the zombies and the mutilated humans was quite gruesome.
It was an 18 certificate as well. I was expecting a lot. To be fair, I don't think.
Yeah, it's about 8 years old.
Yeah, I would say it's probably more a 13.
Would you?
Yeah.
There's a lot of blood.
Yeah.
Now, did you like the scene in the bath?
There was lots of scenes in the bath.
No, where I was sitting at the end of the bath, where my henchman killed the woman who was lying in it.
I don't remember that bit.
You didn't see the movie.
I did. I just don't remember that
You
bit.
Didn't see the movie. The woman who had tried to take my business away from me, my business, I was a human trafficker, bringing people in to feed the zombies, right?
Yeah.
You understood that?
Yeah, all I saw was you being bundled into a police station and then bundled into a car. But after being, not bundled into a car, you were set free. You got away with it.
Now, hang on. I was bundled into the police station by Luke.
Yeah.
Who at the time, funnily enough, actually it was a little longer ago than that. It was just after I'd come out of hospital, after I'd been ill. And he kept stopping. You know, when he got my arm up my back and he's rushing me through the police station and throwing me against the wall.
Yeah.
He kept saying, you're all right. I'm not hurting you, am I? And the director had to keep saying, cut. Can you not ask him that? We're making a move. Can you not do that? And then Luke said, I'll put my hand between you and the wall so it doesn't hurt when I throw you against the wall. I said, oh, great, Luke, thanks. It was really quite bizarre. But there was a bit in it where I'm sitting in the bathroom with this woman, and she's lying in the bath with candles all around. I'm sitting on the toilet, actually, with a big black hat on. And then it's pretty gruesome, so I won't explain it. But you didn't see that part?
I can honestly say I didn't see that part, and I'm starting to think that bit got edited out of the film.
Oh, I hope it didn't. I'm sure I've seen it in there.
I do not remember that bit.
It took us a whole day to do that, because every time it didn't work properly, and they had to this poor woman who laid naked in the bath, every time it didn't go right, they had to cut. She had to get out of the bath, get wrapped in a towel, taken away, and their stunt double would come in. It was bizarre. Cold and Dark, where can you find it?
Amazon, £1.30.
Oh, right, okay. Well, could you go to our movie people and get it there?
I don't know. To be honest, the one I got from Amazon, they sent me, it's got the number 13 written on the disc. It's obviously been previously in a video rental shop.
Oh, that's a shame. Maybe that, yeah, okay. Was the quality any good?
Yeah, it's only DVD, so it's not high resolution or anything.
Okay, right. So I don't know, I transgress anyway. Eurovision.
Yay.
Eurovision. We're fans of Eurovision, of course, because it's so bad, it's good.
Polish porn.
Well, did you see that? I love that Polish number.
I had to pause.
What do you mean porn? There was nothing pornographic. It was a lot. I thought that the message in the song, I thought the inference, I thought it was terrific, absolutely terrific.
The camera angle that I got paused on Sky Plus was definitely porn.
Really? Mm. Well, Andy Swan says he loved it and he thought the same as you. Denny Wise said Kenny Everett was, by the way, the first bearded lady, so that wasn't very original. I noticed people kept putting pictures of me in a frock up on online everywhere. Did you notice that?
Yeah, but you did that Anne Robinson sketch ages ago on your TV programme with a wig.
I did. Alan Seville said that the Dutch song was favourite as voted by the public, but added to the panel that song won. It wasn't the best. It was a vote against Putin. I thought actually the Phoenix Rising, whatever it was called, I thought it was quite good.
It was all right, to be fair. But it does feel like they vote the weirdos every year.
Well, of course, you know. Karen Bowman said it's too political now, James. I don't know why we still enter. I actually prefer the song which came second from the Netherlands, Calm Before the Storm. I can't remember that. Oh, yeah, the country one. I like that as well. Yeah. That was good. I think, Karen, the reason we don't do very well is because Brits abroad are so damned rude.
We pay for that show, don't we, the BBC?
No.
We were the major financial contributor to the... That's why we always get in the final every year.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know. You might be right. I don't know. But I think that countries gang up on each other. I've got this idea that if Britain's actually... Well, I was talking about this on one of my other radio shows last week, that if we learnt or tried to learn other languages more than we do, or when we go on holiday, if we at least are polite and learn to say hello, thank you in the language of the country we go to, we might have a better reputation than the sort of fat chap with his gut hanging out, wearing the Union Jack shorts and a T-shirt that really wouldn't fit a five-year-old child.
I don't go on holiday, so I don't see such things.
And Dave the Rave Bill said, I think the winner looked a bit like Chuck Norris. Actually, that's a very good call. He did, didn't he?
Is it a he or a she?
Say again.
Is it a he or a she?
Who?
The winner.
Of course, it's a female impersonator, you great big lump.
Well, Graham Norton kept on calling it her, she.
Well, I don't know. John Hampson said, rubbish, complete PC turd of a show. Yeah, but you watched it, John Baby, didn't you? You watched it. We had loads and loads and loads of people emailing us and telling us about that. So thank you very much indeed. And if you want to get in touch, by the way, you can email me, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. I think it's time for a quick commercial break. Here's one that I made at least 20 years ago.
One look and you'll know our prices are low whenever you shop at Morrison's.
At Morrison's, Nescafe is only £2.85.
Smooth.
Bird's Eye Economy Burgers, 85 pence.
Sizzling.
And frozen chickens, only 99 pence each.
Tender. Our prices are keen, you know what we mean. Morrison's, to shop at Morrison's.
Well, there we are. That was me when I was a lot younger. And I am still available for voiceovers, of course. Just get in touch, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. Email me. I'll let you know who my agent is. Also, listen, do you fancy a free audio book? If you go to the website, if you're not listening via jameswhaleradio.co.uk, go to the website. Click on the Audible link, and by registering with Audible, you get a free audio book. Now, you could have a free audio version of my autobiography that will tell you all sorts of, I did it, I read it, I took 4 or 5 days out of my life to read it. You can have it for nothing if you want. You don't have to. You don't have to have that. You can have anything you want. Go to Audible, register, and you get a free audiobook. Holidays are coming along. Why wouldn't you want something? You can take it with you. You can listen while you're away or while you're driving or whatever you like. So if you go there and click on the Audible link, you can have that for absolutely free. Is it time for music?
Yes. What have we got this week?
Listen, our friends at talentgb.com. Have you checked out their website, by the way, Rob?
I check it out every week.
Good. Well, you should, because they've got some fascinating things. You know, they've got artists of all kinds, singers, musicians, they've got mimics, they've got all sorts of people on there. And if you are an artist and you would like to get your act out, go to talentgb.com. And if you go there, of course, you could well be interviewed on this program. Talentgb.com is the place to go if you would like to be on the show. Check out with them. And they are, of course, our act bookers, are they not?
They certainly are.
Yeah. Now, this is a track from Gypsy Dynamite. Gypsy Dynamite play a wide repertoire of jazz, gypsy jazz, Spanish and Italian. You know, if we thought about this, we should have put this on the program a while ago, because this would have been, these guys would have been ideal to get in touch with and have at your Eurovision party, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
It would have been great. You could have had them doing some Spanish, some Italian at your Eurovision party. Now, if you like what you're going to hear and you want to book them, well, the place to go is talentgb.com. Here they are, Gypsy Dynamite, and I'll see you in my dreams. So there we are. That was Gypsy Dynamite. You fancy that for one of your parties? Go to talentgb.com and have a word with them. Of course, I'm available for discos. You want a nice 70s or 80s disco, me and Rob will turn up and play a few tunes, and I'll do a bit of the chat, host your evening. And we're a lot less expensive. I don't want to say cheap. We're a lot less expensive than you think.
I was just thinking I could do the lights. I'll just flick the light switch on and off like a strobe effect.
Well, no, I think we should, you know, let people realise that we are, you know, if you want a super-duper mobile disco, that I come along and do all the fantastic, a little bit of Motown, blah, 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 and Rob will come and flick your light switches on and off.
Yeah.
You know, a few hundred quid, we can be yours.
I'd do it for free, you know, I would.
Yeah, well, you do it for free, but I'll have the money.
Okay.
Listen, I wanted to talk about troops coming back from Afghanistan, and you may have seen quite a bit of this in the press this week, and I just wondered what the consensus of feeling was about the fact that we have spent, oh, it's more than 10 years now in Afghanistan. Have we achieved anything? Was it worth it? If the situation arose again, do you think there would be a public outcry against it? I asked this on our Facebook page, and here's some of your responses. Valerie says, too many deaths, no gain. Rob Murphy says, absolutely, 9/11 and 7/7 could have been far more frequent events if not for our actions snuffing out Islamic terrorist fanatics at its root in Afghanistan. I'm not sure, Rob, I agree with you, but it's a point of view. Dan says, getting involved in other countries' problems is rarely worth it. You can't force democracy on a country. It must find it at its own pace. I agree with you, Dan. I think that's right. To do otherwise, as we have seen, doesn't work. Reese says, hello, Reese. He says, that all depends on why we actually went. On a strategic level, it has paid to have a foothold in a very unstable region. I doubt we will ever see the true value of deployment to Afghanistan again. Christopher Morell says, yes, a victory for democracy and revenge. Victoria Kemp Taylor says, as an army mum of two, I think not. When my eldest went to Afghanistan, I was so proud, but it changed him as a person. We hardly speak now. It is so sad. You know, Victoria, the problems of post-traumatic stress disorder, and I don't know whether your son has post-traumatic stress disorder or not, but the fact that we don't, still don't, I don't think anyway, look after our guys when they come back. It is huge mental strain to do the sort of things that we ask them to do, and I think we should be giving them a lot more care, whether they want it or not. A lot of soldiers don't want it and don't consider they have any problems, but psychologically, I think it would affect most of us to do what they have to do and then come back. Arthur Sutherland, hello Arthur, says, as far as female freedoms go, the country will revert to its old ways after the troops leave. And heroin will once again be flooding the market. That may have been hindered, but never stopped. Rob says, people have such short memories. 9/11 originated in Islamic-funded terrorist training camps in Afghanistan. It's easy to bury your left-wing head in the sand, but we live in a safer UK because of it. Rob, interesting point. One day we'll do this program live, invite you to call in, and we'll have a real discussion about that, my friend. Neil Brown says, well, it made the bullet makers happy. And Dan says, NATO is doing what the Nazis wanted to do, one world government. Francis Lawton says, the terrorists on our streets are born and bred in the UK. Tim says, sadly, it didn't do any good at all. Andy says, worth it for who? Not for Joe Public, as Bin Laden was supportedly found in Pakistan. And they've never managed to put opium production onto a roll. And there's the tragedy of lost lives for us and them in what is another illegal war on terror with no UN mandate. Some of your thoughts, divided thoughts, I have to say, about whether it was worth it to be in Afghanistan. If you were in a situation like that, or a situation in some other part of the world, and you needed security, you needed to be looked after, you needed to know that you would be safe, or in this country, if you get a stalker, or if you've said something publicly that people disagree with. How do you go about finding security? You know, when you see the celebrities, or you see the prime ministers or the presidents with all their security guards around, where do these people come from? What sort of organizations are they? Well, strangely enough, I know somebody who has such an organization, and his name is Will Geddes. Good day to you, sir.
And a good day to you, sir.
Well, first of all, if I was to ask you to explain exactly what you do for a living, how would you do that?
Well, probably the best way to encapsulate it, James, is to say that I'm a specialist in what we call threat management. And threat management, in its purest sense, is in terms of human risk issues of varying different spectrums that could impact on an individual. So it could be anything from your general welfare and your safety and personal protection through to managing a threat that has been made against you, and whether that be anything from a harassment to a stalking to even a kidnap risk. I'm quite often called by various people, from heads of state right down to Joe Public, to try and provide assistance and support in how best to manage.
So when I talk about security, Will, you are not likely to supply people to stand on the door of a nightclub?
No, probably not. We would be falling into the category that if you said to me, Will, I want to go down to Afghanistan or Iraq or Colombia or Angola, as where I have teams right now, then we would be the guys that you would call.
And if I was to ring you and say, listen, Mr. Geddes, I've been advised that you might be able to offer me a job, what sort of qualifications would I need to have?
Well, to be honest, James, it's a fairly closed circuit, as you might imagine. And the vast majority of the guys who work for me generally come from three distinct areas or backgrounds, if you like. And that's either former military, former law enforcement or police, or former intelligence community. And the reason being is that with many of these guys, because of the nature of the business that we're involved in, there have to be some fundamental skill sets already embedded within their experience that they can bring to, obviously, the equation to whether it be protection or whether it be problem solving or whether it be investigation. And therefore, it's a very difficult market to crack if you don't come from one of those backgrounds. But that's not to say that there have been the odd unique individual that has come to our table that ultimately, if they didn't have those skills, we've been able to develop them.
And would you actually go after certain individuals that you know of, Will, for a particular job you have in mind?
Well, as you can imagine, James, I've been in this industry in excess of 20 years now. And over that time, I've worked with the great, the good, and the bad, I can readily admit, in the industry sector. And I have developed and created a very unique team across the world that have, you know, these particular skill sets that you can bring to whatever situation that you have. And thankfully, because we have a reasonably good reputation out there, there are individuals that are coming out of their particular units that will quite often drop us a phone call or an email to let us know they're coming out on City Street. And if they come again with some unique aspects, we will snap them up as quickly as we can.
Now, I've known you for a good number of years, Will, I must confess. And I know very little about you. I mean, we've been out from time to time. We've shared a drink from time to time. But if people ask me how much I knew about you, it would be very difficult. For instance, if I ask you, were you in the police? Were you in the armed forces? What would you say?
Well, probably the best answer that I can give, James, and bearing in mind, obviously, that this is being broadcast to many people around the world, I come from a fairly unusual situation, and probably of the categories that I just mentioned earlier, that doesn't come from any particularly formal background, but has been involved in providing training and assistance to various determined agencies and groups. From initially getting into this industry as a close protection officer, and then meeting, obviously, across my years, various individuals that, as a sponge, I've absorbed and soaked and assimilated all their various skills. Obviously, picked from what those are good things and picked from the bad things, and ultimately come into this position where I don't fall into any one particular camp, but I've worked across all three.
Could you be described as being a James Bond type character?
James, that is always something that we try and steer as much away from as possible. The James Bond character is terribly glamorous, and as you know, I'm sure from some of the more boring stories I've shared with you over a cup of tea or a bite of lunch, a lot of our business can be quite mundane. Having said that, there are the odd cases and the odd projects that come up, which are extremely unique and sometimes pay us some of that fictional depiction into a bit of a grey area.
Would you work for a country, a government for a country that you personally didn't necessarily agree with? If the country, the head of state of a country rang you and said, listen, I need your particular services or the services of the people you employ, would you still work for them?
You know, that's a really good question, James. And it's a challenge that we have to take on a case-by-case basis. There have been individuals that I haven't necessarily agreed with their agendas, but as long as they're not criminal and they are not, if you like, blacklisted by any particular government, then we have to take those cases and judge them on our own ethical standards as to whether we would want to service or assist. We've had some individuals that have been, I would say, very much of the more morally questionable angle that we have very distinctly turned around and rejected working for because it just did not qualify on our own perceptions of what we believe to be right. Having said that, there have been individuals that have been assessed to be individuals that could be questionable, and we may ourselves carry out our own due diligence and then make our own call on it based on what we find.
You said that Joe Bloggs could employ you. Would Joe Bloggs, who employs you, have to be a lottery winner, a big industrialist, a man, woman, perhaps, who has a lot of money?
Not necessarily. I mean, the one thing that one always has to bear in mind is there is always a cost to anything, as we all know. And depending on what one necessarily is needing, may be as simple as a conversation. It could be, and I have this quite often, someone who has a particular issue that they may say, what do I do in these circumstances? And it could be as simple as a 20-minute conversation on the phone that gives them the answer that they've been angsting over. There can be other occasions where what might be seen in simplicity to be a quick fix might actually require a considerable amount of resource. So although Joe Bloggs on the street could potentially call, naturally there is a vast wealth of experience that goes behind even that 20-minute conversation that will have some value attached to it. To give you a precise figure, very difficult to say, James. Again, it's case by case.
All right. If I got in touch with Will Geddes Security, and not that that's the name of your company, but I don't know whether you want to mention the name of your company or not.
It's ICP Group.
Okay. That which says nothing to anyone at all, really. Whenever you meet Will, he's dressed completely in black, by the way.
But I think it makes it so much easier in the morning, James. I don't have to pick out and choose what I need to wear.
If I got in touch and said, listen, Mr. Geddes, I'm about to go to a foreign country. I'll tell you which the country is. And what I need is basically I need, I don't know, I need around about 15 to 20 very experienced military-type people who can keep me safe and be prepared to take some risks. Could you supply that?
I could, although, James, obviously, other than yourself and heads of state, 15 security officers could be quite a large number, again, depending on where you're going in the world. But more often than not, it could be a meet and greet at the airport if you're going into certain countries to make sure you clear immigration and customs nice and smoothly. It could be some ground level journey management, which is a vehicle, a driver, perhaps even with an escort vehicle, with a close protection officer or two. Again, depending on where you're going, James, will depend on the level of security that you'll probably need. But again, there are certain parts of the world which are perceived to be at very high risk, where you may not, that may actually work against you to go in too heavy with your 15-strong close protection team. I mean, in certain parts of the world, that could actually probably draw more problems than it actually solves.
All right, let's talk a bit about Nigeria now, because this is the story that prompted me to call you in the first place. But this is also the story that's on everybody's minds. This rather strange, shadowy organization, Boko Haram, who are an offshoot, I believe, of Al-Qaeda. They sound incredibly dangerous to me. How on earth can you go and get those children away from them?
It's a really difficult one. And on any kind of hostage negotiation, it's always going to be a matter of ensuring you have a good dialogue with the kidnappers, with the hostage takers, to try and find some sort of common ground to try and meet some resolutions, which in the first instance can quite often be completely unreasonable. The problem with Boko Haram is this group, although you say are Al-Qaeda connected, that hasn't necessarily been confirmed fully. They are believed to be connected to AQM or Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, and also to Al-Shabaab, which are the well-known terrorist organization operating out of Somalia. But they themselves are a very, very extreme jihadist group that are trying to introduce Sharia law in the northeast regions of Nigeria. And they kidnap and attack and assassinate the locals and various different key figures in the areas in Nigeria on a very regular basis. They're very well organized. They're well resourced. They have considerable armaments at their disposal. And they also have the borders to Cameroon and Niger at their disposal. So they are able to slip across the border and escape capture quite easily. So in terms of rescuing and recovering these girls, it's going to be a very, very difficult job. But as we know, there's an international delegation of advisors from the UK, the US, China, and France that have gone down there to assist and support the Nigerians. But it will be a combination of trying to establish that dialogue, hopefully bringing in community leaders within the Muslim community to try and level some pressure, and ideally try and identify where the girls are actually being held.
Is that possible to do? I mean, we're told that the forest they might have escaped into is something like 11 times the size of Wales. I mean, that's a pretty difficult job.
It is. The Sambisa Forest is, and the whole topography around that region, James, is incredibly difficult. And it will be difficult even for satellites and for drones to be able to identify any kind of movement in that area. So the first challenge is obviously the environment within which the hostages are being held. There is also, and I'm sure many of your listeners have already seen in the media, a very good likelihood that the girls have been segregated into various different groups. And this is not an uncommon tactic that is used, obviously, by kidnappers taking large numbers, because then obviously it makes it far harder, for any kind of rescue attempt to try and achieve a one fell swoop in the recovery of those hostages. But again, any rescue attempt, from my experience, has always been a last resort. And it is only considered when the hostages' lives are felt to be so sufficiently endangered that there are no other options and negotiations have been exhausted.
So these people will be negotiated with, even though they seem like a bunch of lawless kids who've got their hands on guns and think they can do whatever they want, we will still talk to them.
Absolutely. I mean, the talking process, James, is very critical on a number of levels. The first of which is what we call the proof of life. And that video that we saw recently released, obviously, with some of the schoolgirls actually dressed in Muslim, obviously, traditional wear, was one of the proofs of life that may have been actually requested by negotiators from the get-go. The first thing that we do in a hostage negotiation is determine the welfare and the safety of the hostages themselves. And there are some key messages to also send over to the ransom, the hostage-taking or kidnapping group, to fundamentally communicate that they must keep the hostages in the best condition possible. Because obviously, should the hostages expire, either through malnutrition, through ill care, through mistreatment, or anything else for that matter, that can potentially reduce the value that the kidnappers may potentially have for those hostages.
And if I was to ask you, Will, can you find me one of the best hostage negotiators there is, could you?
Absolutely, without question.
Are they expensive to hire?
Are they expensive to hire? How much is the price of a hostage? that's probably the best answer I can give you.
Do you have people in Nigeria at the moment?
I do. I have got teams in Nigeria. Not in that specific region and not on that task, but I do have teams there.
Is there a part of the country, sorry, part of the world that you just would not consider working in?
I think the simple answer to that, and I am responding very quickly rather than deliberating, no, there isn't any particular location in the world where we wouldn't consider operating. Whether we could or not, James, is a whole different matter. So, for example, to try and operate in somewhere like North Korea would simply be unfeasible because we wouldn't be allowed to. But in most other territories around and countries around the world, I don't think there are any particularly hot spots that we haven't touched.
I mean, if I asked you, could you get somebody into North Korea to help someone who was stuck there, would you be able to do it?
I think it would be very difficult, James. I think you'd have to call your other James namesake to help you on that one.
All right, lastly, Will, I know you get some celebrities, politicians, as I say, heads of state. When we see celebrities wandering about with three or four heavies around them, I mean, recently we saw the ex-chairman of the Co-op Bank turn up to court with three minders. Is that the sort of job you would consider doing or not? Or
yeah, we do certainly provide protection for celebrities and for high-profile individuals and executives. Certainly in terms of that provision, you've got to be, again, very careful how it's presented because it can, again, work against the principle. I would say in most cases, James, 90% of our clients don't want close protection, but they do realize they need it. So you try and balance it with the appropriate match of personalities and experience to try and make that process for an executive, which is often quite an anxious and stressful situation, as easy as possible without obviously enhancing that level of stress by the presence of having security. You know, there are many times I've seen celebrities with great big lumps surrounding them. And there is a question as to, is it necessary or is it purely to stroke their ego?
If you felt somebody was wanting to employ your services to stroke their ego, would you still take the job?
Probably not, James. To be honest, and with the exception of your good self, the vast majority of celebrities can be a bit of a nightmare. And ultimately, there are plenty of providers out there who no doubt will jump at the chance to provide security for a celebrity. We would generally deal with those that really genuinely need it and are also understanding that having protection and having security around them does come with its inconveniences sometimes.
And actually, I presume you wouldn't want any of your employees to be seen particularly.
Well, ideally, yes. If you look at some of the very big A-listers from Hollywood, you won't very often see or be able to detect within their entourage who their security is. And quite often that's because the celebrity has had the full range of security in the past and they know what they want and they know what they don't want. And it's usually the quiet ones. It's like a lot of guys who come out of special forces. These guys are not 6'7" mountains. You know, these guys are quite often are sub-6 foot. They're very slight. They're built like racing snakes, but they do have the 100 yards there to go with it.
The person who looks a big, rough, tough guy may not necessarily be the security, could in fact be the decoy.
Well, let's put it this way. Absolutely. If I was the threat, James, and I was a considered and experienced threat, it wouldn't be the big fella I'm looking for. I'm looking for the beady-eyed one that's hanging around in the corners.
All right. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, Will, how would they do it?
Well, their best bet is probably to go through our website, and that is www.icpgroupcompanies.com.
Will, good to talk to you. Until the next time, thank you very much.
And James, always a pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Well, there we are. That's my friend Will Geddes, who I've known for a number of years, and he's thoroughly, thoroughly nice bloke. Rob, we should have a night out, you, me and Will.
He sounds like a really, really interesting guy. Fortunately, I've got his phone number now, so any problems, I know where I'm handling.
You know where to go. I know very little about Will. He's got a charming wife. He's very smart, but he's quite reticent to tell you too much about himself. Interesting, eh?
He's the man to know.
He's the man to know. You know, you could see yourself sitting in a bar in one of these countries where it's a bit dangerous to go out on your own, and you could see Will there sitting in a kind of safari suit with a Panama hat, smoking on a cigar, couldn't you?
Yeah, just blending in.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, anyway, I think it's time for a bit of music. We're doing the Gypsy Swing thing today, courtesy of our friends at talentgb.com. They're providing us with music and entertainment for the show, and if you want to see, hear, or hire any of the artists you heard on the programme today, all you've got to do is go to talentgb.com. And if you want to be on the show, if you want to know how to get on the show, maybe you have an act, maybe you think you're worth an interview, go to talentgb.com and they will tell you more. Now, this is a band who are called Café Manouche. Do you think that's pronounced right?
Yeah, I'm glad you're doing the reading and not me. Yeah,
oh, really? Yeah. They perform regularly at the spiritual home of Gypsy Swing in the UK. That is the Cucumber Bar in Battersea. I know it well.
Do you now?
I'm never out of there. The Cucumber Bar in Battersea.
Is that in the southwest of London?
What? Battersea? Southeast, mate.
Southeast? Are you sure?
Yeah.
It says southwest.
South of the river, Battersea. It does say southwest on this script, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, Battersea to me has always been southeast. Battersea Dog's home, south of the River Thames, to me is the southeast. Okay, I suppose it's the southwest, if you like. It's that bit over the river from Chelsea. Where would you say Chelsea was? Southeast, southwest?
Chelsea's in London.
Yeah, okay. Right, so this is Café Manouche, and it's a track. Well, you introduce this.
Okay. This is,
Oh, look, don't be silly. It's Bermi Bis Duchen.
Say that again.
Bermi Bis Duchen.
Oh, to me you are beautiful.
Absolutely, here it is.
Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some since I first met you, I was lonesome. But then you came inside, dear, my heart grew light, and this whole world seemed new to me. Well, I have to admit you deserve the expression that really fits you. So while I rack my brain trying to explain all the things that you do to me, please let me explain. Bermi Bis Duchen means that you're great. Bermi Bis Duchen, again I'll explain. It means you're the fairest in the land. I could say Bella, Bella, even so.
Okay, that was Café Manouche and Bien Miss Duchenne.
If you say so.
What are you laughing at? What is your problem?
Your pronunciation.
Bien Miss Duchenne. Bien Miss Duchenne.
Sounds like you're being played backwards.
You're making me choke now. Bien Miss Duchenne. It says to me, Bien Miss Duchenne, you are beautiful.
Thank you for saying that. That's nice of you.
Listen, if you want them at your party or you've got a gig coming up, you're looking for an entertainment, that is fun. The Gypsy Swing Band Café Manouche. And if you go to, tell them where they should go.
TalentGB.com. I really like that track. That was very good.
I like that too.
Even though we can't say it.
Why not? We just said we liked it.
As in the name. I can't say it.
Bien Miss Duchenne.
You sound like he's being played backwards.
Bien Miss Duchenne.
Oh, dear.
You're listening to the James Whale Radio Show, and, of course, you can get us in any language you want. if you want to get in touch with the programme, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. Just email me there, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. You can hear us, of course, via Audio Boo, but you'll know that if you're doing it. And tell your friends, listen, tell all your friends to listen to James Whale's radio show, which is online every week. You can go to jameswhaleradio.co.uk, as you know, but I'm just telling you this to sort of pass on to all your friends. And there's about 34 hours of me talking to people from Boy George to Theo Pathetis and others. And today, well, of course, security expert Will Geddes. And then we've got the shop. Have we sold anything lately?
Yeah, we sold some T-shirts.
Well, that's all right. What about copies of my book? I've got a garage full.
Yeah, maybe we should do buy 5, get 10 free or something.
Buy 5, get 10 free. Actually, why don't you, and you get them for, what, $6.95 each, signed by me. I have spent hours signing these books. If you want, it's a little keepsake, because you download the audio book, listen to me reading it, and you keep the book with the pictures.
Nice pictures, too.
Yeah, very nice pictures. James Whale Radio /shop. JamesWhaleRadio.co.uk/shop, right?
JamesWhaleRadio.co.uk/shop.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. I think that's about it, really, for this week.
I think so. I'm going to learn some... Is it French?
I think it's German.
It sounds German when you read it, yeah.
Well, it sounds German when you look at it.
It sounds German when you look at it.
When they're written down, it sounds German. But, you know, that's the problem with us Brits. We're not good at foreign languages. By the way, there are some very nice logoed up James Whale T-shirts and baseball caps at the shop too. I'm just mentioning that. I know you did, because, of course, the summer is coming.
I need to send your cap down to you.
You do, so that I can wear it. Yeah, that's a good idea. So don't forget, if you want to get in touch, hire our amazing mobile disco, or you just want me to come along and say a few words at a do, I am available. I've still got a few dates left. jamesweareradio@gmail.com. Get in touch. Say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
See you soon. Don't forget to check out some of the other programs as well.
James Whale.
You're listening to the James Whale Radio Show. For more information, visit www.jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Why not check us out on facebook.com/JamesWhaleRadioShow or follow James on Twitter @TheJamesWhale. James Whale, the voice of reason.